content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, my name is Kenny Yee for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Education Today. We'll begin with an article from U.S. News entitled, Remote Students of All Races and Incomes Suffered During Pandemic. Researchers found that the thriving gap hit students universally who learned remotely during the pandemic. Academic achievement gaps and social and emotional learning loss are all major concerns spiraling out of the coronavirus pandemic, especially for low-income students and students of color. Now parents, teachers, and policymakers can add one more to that list of concerns, the thriving gap. A new study shows the combined impact of academic, social, and emotional learning loss among high school students who learned remotely last year compared to those who attended school in person, coining the term thriving gap to characterize the negative repercussions that were nearly universal among all who had learned remotely. Many news stories have reported on individual stories of teenagers who have suffered from anxiety, depression, and other mental health challenges during the pandemic, says Angela Duckworth, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, founder and CEO of Character Lab, and lead author of the new study published Wednesday in Educational Research, the peer-reviewed journal of the American Educational Research Association. This study gives some of the first empirical evidence of how learning remotely has affected adolescent well-being, she says. The new research shows that high school students who attended school remotely during the COVID-19 pandemic suffered socially, emotionally, and academically compared with those who attended in person, which seems obvious enough on its face. But what the new study unearthed that's notable is that for high school students who learned remotely, the thriving gap was universal, hitting middle and upper income students just as much as it impacted low income students and students of color. The adverse effects were not enormous in magnitude, but the researchers underscored that the fact that they found the thriving gap consistent across gender, race, ethnicity, and socioeconomic status means that it impacted millions of students. As policymakers gear up for national tutoring and remediation programs, which we agree are urgent priorities, we must recognize that our nation's students are not just lagging as performers, they are suffering as people, says Duckworth. Meeting their intrinsic psychological needs for social connection, for positive emotion, and authentic intellectual engagement is a challenge that cannot wait. The data come as schools across the country plan to welcome back to classrooms full-time millions of students who haven't been in person consistently for over a year. And it sheds light on a segment of students, high schoolers, about whom policymakers have very little information. Until the end of the 2020-2021 school year, when many high school students became eligible for COVID-19 vaccines, they were the most difficult to return to in-person learning because of how often they shuffle from one class to the next, making frequent sanitization and social distancing close to impossible. It's estimated that the vast majority of the country's high school students learned remotely last school year. With the new school year just weeks away for the earliest opening districts and the updated school reopening guidance from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Education Secretary Miguel Cardona is making a full court press to push school districts to return all students to classrooms for in-person learning. I expect all schools across the country to give students full-time schooling 5 days a week in the fall, he said recently in an interview on ABC News. Students learn best in the classroom. I think they've suffered enough through the pandemic. It's on us now to make sure we're doing what we need to do to make sure we're getting them safely in the classroom. The next article comes from The Washington Post, and it's entitled, How America Failed Students with Disabilities During the Pandemic. One beautiful afternoon last summer, 9-year-old Maki climbed onto a trampoline behind his Northern Virginia home and began screaming like he had been shot. His mother rushed into the yard. Maki, who was diagnosed with high-functioning autism and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and who had been doing well academically and socially before the pandemic, cried out that there was a snake on his back. He was crouched in a squat, face rigid with fear. He yelled at his mother to take away the gigantic reptile about to wrap itself around his neck. She tried to tell him there was no snake. Maki was suffering a breakdown in his ability to perceive reality. More than a dozen doctors and child psychiatrists later told his parents that they believed the months Maki spent learning at home last spring, away from daily school rituals and other children, contributed to his stunning deterioration. They said it was vital that he return to in-person school, full-time if possible. Maki, whose parents spoke on the condition that his last name not be revealed to protect his privacy, was briefly hospitalized. Then, finally, he went back into a classroom in November for several days a week. But for months, he was alone with a monitor, using an iPad to follow his teacher's remote instruction. In the spring, more students returned and Maki was with them 2 days a week. This month, his time with other students increased and the teacher returned. It's still nothing like school as he knew it before. And although kids everywhere in America have seen their school days upended by the coronavirus pandemic, the break-in routine is especially devastating for students like Maki, who often depend on structures and patterns for a secure sense of self. More than a year after the pandemic began, officials in school districts across the country concede they failed during the crisis to deliver the quality of education that students with disabilities are legally entitled to receive. The consequences of this failure are likely to linger for years, if not decades, advocates and experts warn. More than 7 million students are eligible for special educational services under the Federal Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, also known as IDEA. These children, each of whom follow an individualized education program that spells out what extra or different services they need at school, account for an estimated 14% of all U.S. school children. While some thrived while learning from home during the pandemic, including a boy whose wheelchair left him feeling out of place at school, but who became indistinguishable from his classmates on Zoom, most did not, and advocates and educators say many have suffered significant developmental setbacks. The pandemic forced schools and districts to acknowledge ways they have long struggled to meet the needs of their most vulnerable students. It spurred school officials in some places to get creative in reaching students stuck at home, leading to the development of technology, tactics, and techniques that will probably outlive the pandemic. Nobody's got it perfect, said Lauren Katzman, an associate research professor at Arizona State University and executive director of the Urban Special Education Leadership Collaborative, which works with city school districts. But now there are places that are doing well and places that are set up to do well as it moves forward. Subheading, Frustrated Parents Turn to Courts. When schools closed last spring, parents in all kinds of households had to take over the teaching of their children. But the burden fell especially heavy on those whose children have severe disabilities and require a menu of different therapies: speech, vision, physical, occupational. Being a parent and a teacher and a therapist and a clinician and a guidance counselor and a freaking cook and a janitorial staff member, it's just not sustainable, said Maki's mother, Lisa, who quit her job as a physical trainer to manage the instruction of Maki and his 9-year-old sister Bella, who has cerebral palsy. We're slowly dying on the inside. School officials knew that students with disabilities were struggling the most, so when they started to usher children back into the classroom, they put students with disabilities at the front of the line. But progress was slow. Health precautions meant time in person was limited. Teachers and providers were not always willing to re-enter classrooms. Sometimes, special needs students had trouble wearing masks. In Meriden, Connecticut, where Education Secretary Miguel Cardona lived and taught elementary school, the school district, against the advice of the state, sent some children home because they couldn't keep their masks on. The district had to reverse its policy after parents complained. Frustrated mothers and fathers turned to the courts, filing lawsuits in states including Hawaii, Illinois, Pennsylvania, and New York. The central allegation was the same. Children with disabilities are being denied the education they have a right to receive under federal law. The Education Department began investigating the issue in late 2020 during the Trump administration, targeting large school systems such as the Indiana Department of Education, Seattle Public Schools, the Los Angeles Unified School District, and Fairfax County Public Schools in Virginia. The department said Friday it could not comment on open cases. Problems with special education programs are nothing new. In 1975, Congress passed IDEA, the main federal law addressing the needs of students with disabilities. It requires school districts to deliver a, quote, free appropriate public education to all students with disabilities. It also stipulates that education must take place in the least restrictive environment possible, meaning special needs children have maximal ability to interact with non-special needs students. When IDEA passed, the federal government pledged to pay 40% of the average cost of education for students with disabilities every year. It has never come close. In fiscal year 2020, it provided just over 13% of what was promised, giving states $12.8 billion. President Biden promised to put the federal government on a years-long path to finally reaching its 40% target, and he is proposing in his 2022 budget a $2.6 billion boost in funding for special education over the course of 2021, bringing the federal total to $15.6 billion. In the American Rescue Plan Act passed by Congress in March, Biden sought and won an additional one-time $3 billion boost for IDEA so districts can help special education students recover from the pandemic. But the issues go beyond funding. Schools almost never have enough special education teachers. The federal government says the national shortage is at 8%, but it's more acute than that in some states. In Michigan, State Superintendent Michael Rice recently said there is a, quote, critical shortage of these teachers. The lack of trained special education teachers has led many districts to hire people who aren't credentialed in the field. In California, the Commission on Teacher Credentialing reported that in the 2017-2018 school year, only about 38% of new special education teachers were credentialed. As a result, students with disabilities who often have the greatest needs are frequently taught by the least qualified teachers, concluded a 2020 report by the California-based Learning Policy Institute, a nonprofit think tank. Schools also frequently are short of speech pathologists who coach special needs children struggling to talk, and occupational and physical therapists who work with children struggling to walk or move around. The problem worsened during the pandemic when these workers could not go into students' homes to do their jobs. Some districts were able to offer some of these special services online, but many are impossible to replicate in the virtual world. Subheading, Isolated and Scared, Learning Little. Moet Archer, who works as a special education consultant in Atlanta, had gone to work in person with some of the students she serves during the pandemic. But that meant the 42-year-old single mother had to leave her two teenage daughters with disabilities to learn at home unsupervised. Aliyah Manning, 15, is autistic, and her speech and language skills are impaired. Ariana Manning, 14, has a hearing impairment. For a long time, school meant sitting on sofas in their living room while they stared into school-provided computers perched on TV trays. The girls felt isolated and scared, and learned little, if anything, both said. Ariana said she stopped speaking in online class because kids laughed at her for asking, quote, easy questions. The teenagers returned to school in person part-time this spring, and Archer's boyfriend is now supervising them on the days they learn virtually, fielding their questions and prodding them to complete assignments. Yet the girls have regressed, their mom said. At times, Aliyah responds to questions by grunting, a habit she had almost kicked pre-pandemic. Ariana has lost math skills and is forgetting simple things, such as the days of the month, Archer said. Both girls' grades have plummeted. They say they hate school now. I don't think I ever had anxiety, but now I do, said Ariana, who sometimes becomes convinced her body is shaking when it is motionless. I don't think they should count grades against us this year. Subheading, Some Adapted, Some Benefited. While most districts struggled to help students with disabilities, some adapted, including Wisconsin's Sun Prairie Area School District. The district has 8,400 students. 1,333 of them are diagnosed with disabilities including autism, traumatic brain injuries, and vision impairments. The special education director, Jennifer Apodaca, said staff members revamped individualized learning plans for every student with disabilities so they could learn effectively in the virtual world. They created how-to videos for parents and caregivers and met regularly with them, online, to offer advice on how to support their child. We have learned the importance of technology literacy for every single student, no matter how significant their impairment, she said, noting that students with all kinds of disabilities have become proficient with online tools. Special education and classroom teachers started co-planning lessons, and for the 2020-2021 year, the district created student support hubs, teams of people at every school site that address children's academic and personal needs, starting with the most vulnerable kids. We have learned to do incredible things within our circumstances, Epidaka said. Virtual school benefited some students with disabilities. For those with anxiety or attention deficit disorders, learning from home removed distractions, enabling unprecedented academic excellence, advocates said. Online learning allowed others to transform socially. Ryan Desai in Loudoun County, Virginia, had always stood out in school. He was born with a rare bone disease that makes his hands stiff and swollen, locks his major joints in a bent position, and erodes his bone density over time. The 9-year-old traveled his school's hallways in a motorized wheelchair and encountered uncountable barriers to inclusion. When other children sat on the floor for circle time, he had to remain lofted above them in his wheelchair. But in virtual school, Ryan became just another face on the screen. He feels like he's part of the class, said his mother, Bobby Desai. It was something I would have never foreseen. Last September, Ryan donned a button-down shirt and wheeled himself in front of his family's fireplace. He faced a camera, took a deep breath, and began, "Hello, everyone. It is good to be here. I am Ryan Desai. I would like to be your president." He was running, he said, because he wanted to help everyone succeed at virtual learning and to, quote, love everyone more. He promised to deliver longer breaks and more learning games. When the votes came in, Ryan was elected class president. Subheading: It's overwhelming. In Arlington, Virginia, Maki's parents still worry about his future. The doctors warned that the longer Maki is stuck with the pandemic's version of school, the more lasting damage he is likely to suffer. Maki continues to hallucinate and babble about his favorite football players or a scene from a Batman movie, said Reed, his father. The chatter is a verbal form of, quote, stimming, something some children on the autism spectrum do when they feel stressed. It calms Maki down. He's in school with other students 4 days a week now, and the school is trying to reduce his iPad time. At a meeting this month, his teachers told them that he had fallen a year behind in his reading skills during the pandemic. But what Reed said replays in his mind is a scene the day before Maki's 9th birthday in November. He had just finished giving his son a bath. Maki stared into the distance, looking at nothing, as his father wrapped him in a towel. He said, "Daddy, can I die for my birthday?" Not all days are bad. On a recent, better one, Lisa tried to bring her son's attention back to his schoolwork. Standing in the family's kitchen, she asked him to mimic her as she extended both arms all the way out and brought them back in, one by one, to touch her nose. "It's overwhelming," Maki told his mother. She nodded. "It's hard," he said, and she nodded again. But he bent over a math worksheet and got all his subtraction problems right. The next article comes from the News and Observer, entitled, "Nicole Hannah-Jones Will Not Join UNC Chapel Hill Faculty After Tenure Controversy." Nicole Hannah-Jones will not be teaching at UNC Chapel Hill this fall, she revealed on CBS This Morning on Tuesday, in her first on-the-record interview since her tenure application blew up into a national story. Instead, she'll be an inaugural night chair at Howard University. Hannah Jones was to join the UNCCH faculty as the night chair in race and investigative journalism at the Hussman School of Journalism and Media, but will instead be teaching in that role at Howard. She was awarded tenure by UNCCH trustees with a 9-4 vote last week after weeks of public pressure and criticism. Hannah Jones said her tenure was originally delayed because of interference from political appointees and from Walter Hussman Jr., who gave the UNCCH Journalism School its largest gift ever. "It's pretty clear that my tenure was not taken up because of political opposition, because of discriminatory views against my viewpoints, and, I believe, because of my race and my gender," Hannah Jones said. "It has to be made clear. I went through the official tenure process, and my peers in academia said that I was deserving of tenure," she said. "The board members are political appointees who decided that I wasn't." In the past, UNCCH's night chairs have been granted tenure, but trustees originally set aside her tenure application to explore, quote, questions. Hannah Jones is a black woman, MacArthur Genius Grant recipient, and Pulitzer Prize winner who has researched and written extensively on the effects of racism in American society. She was the creator of the New York Times' 1619 project about the lasting impacts of slavery. Subheading, Joining Howard University, an HBCU. Hannah Jones and author Ta-Nehisi Coates, who is also a MacArthur Fellow, will join Howard's faculty to establish the Center for Journalism and Democracy. Their appointments are supported by a $20 million donation from the MacArthur, Knight, and Ford Foundations and an anonymous donor. Hannah Jones said she had been very thoughtful about her decision to go to the private, historically black university in Washington, D.C. She said she gained clarity through the situation at UNCCH. Since the second grade, when I started being bussed into white schools, I've spent my entire life proving that I belong in elite white spaces that were not built for black people, Hannah Jones said. I decided that I didn't want to do that anymore, that black professionals should feel free, and actually perhaps an obligation, to go to our own institutions and bring our talents and resources to our own institutions and help to build them up as well. This next article comes from USA Today, entitled, Court Overturns FDA Ban on Electric Shock Treatment at Massachusetts School. A Massachusetts school can continue using electric shock devices on its students with intellectual disabilities after the U.S. Court of Appeals overturned the Food and Drug Administration's ban on the controversial practice last week. The judges ruled 2-1 in favor of the practice that is still being used at the Judge Rotenberg Education Center in Canton, Massachusetts, and said that, quote, the FDA lacks the statutory authority to ban a medical device for a particular use. The center, which cares for children and adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities, seems to be the only institution in the United States using shock therapy on its students to correct self-harming and aggressive behavior, according to the FDA. The center believed that the shocks would help modify the behavior of a student. The FDA said that the electrical stimulation devices presented, quote, an unreasonable and substantial risk of illness or injury in a statement announcing the initial ban of the devices in March 2020. They initially pursued the ban in 2016, not long after a 2002 video of a student being shocked repeatedly for not taking off his jacket made headlines, displaying the student shouting in pain. A civil trial developed out of the instance and later resulted in a settlement in 2012. Some parents have defended the practice, saying that it has helped their children from causing self-harm. This next article comes from Education Week, entitled, The Pandemic Made It Harder to Spot Students with Disabilities. Now Schools Must Catch Up. Kenesha Aiken had suspected her son, Carter, might have dyslexia, but it wasn't until his Katy, Texas school closed in March 2020 that she was certain. Carter, then in first grade, quickly switched to remote learning alongside millions of students around the country as leaders struggled to contain the COVID-19 pandemic. That gave Aiken a rare chance to watch her son's day-to-day learning experience up close. As his virtual class did reading exercises, Carter struggled to blend sounds together. Even after seeming to master a word on one page of a book, he failed to recognize the same word a few pages later. Sometimes his frustration would lead to misbehavior or a lack of focus, and his reading skills were noticeably different from his classmates and even his younger sisters. I was panicking, Aiken said. I thought, if we don't do something quick, he's going to be in trouble. Regardless of the world shutting down, time was still passing, and he was still going to have to go to second grade next year. Nationwide, 7.3 million students, around 14% of all public school students, receive services under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, the nation's primary special education law. Policymakers have sounded alarms about meeting those students' needs during the pandemic, and some fear there are children who need those services who haven't been identified at all. Parents and teachers are often the first to recognize the signs of disabilities in students. That's especially true of students with learning disabilities, whose needs may not be as immediately obvious as those of other students who need special education services. And during the pandemic, both parents and teachers have faced significant interruptions that have made recognizing those needs more difficult, educators told Education Week. Like Aiken, some families flagged concerns as they supervised their children's participation in online lessons. But many other parents, including those who couldn't afford work interruptions, didn't have the option of staying home to monitor their children's remote learning, or might not have recognized any subtle issues as they emerged. For teachers, extended periods of remote learning or class time interrupted by frequent quarantines robbed them of the small, ordinary encounters that can help them gauge students' progress. How quickly children turn pages, how they engage with peers, how they respond to frustrations with reading and math exercises, even the appearance of their handwriting, which may have been replaced by typing into an online program. Those dynamics combine with other challenges to form a perfect storm for schools as they seek to return to normal. They must work to separate which students need assessments for learning disabilities and which children's academic struggles can be attributed to the ordinary fidgeting and grimacing that comes with learning in front of a computer. Educators must work to recognize concerns that may have gone unidentified and to prioritize which newfound parental concerns are the most urgent. Many will do so with less data from classroom assessments and statewide exams than they would have in a typical year. And they will tackle those needs as they also strain to accommodate heightened social and emotional stress for all students after an unprecedented set of school years. It's going to be really difficult to assess where students are and to determine whether what we are seeing is the result of a disability or a new baseline for everyone, said Megan Whitaker, the Director of Policy and Advocacy for the National Center for Learning Disabilities. Subheading: Looking for Warning Signs of Disabilities. With a family history of dyslexia, Aiken said her, quote, radar was turned on very high to warning signs for her children. As she studied up on the special education process, she enrolled Carter in a small private program focused on reading instruction for the last school year. After recently getting a formal evaluation and diagnosis from her school district of dyslexia and dysgraphia, a disability related to handwriting, she's weighing her options for the 2021-2022 school year. But there may be many children showing similar warning signs of disabilities that have gone undetected, said Winnie Williams Hall, an 8th grade special education teacher in Chicago. The early signals of disabilities can be very difficult for parents and even teachers to recognize, she said, and remote learning made that even more difficult for educators. During in-person learning, you are face-to-face with the student and you can gauge facial expressions when you need to slow down, Williams Hall said. But that's difficult to do during virtual learning, and the student doesn't even have the camera on. Similarly, while a student with a behavioral disorder or emotional disturbance may physically disengage or seem defiant in an in-person classroom, that same student may mute their microphone and ignore their computer in remote learning, and it can be difficult for educators to determine why they are absent from class discussions, Williams Hall said. Even for teachers familiar with learning disabilities, the sound quality and limitations of computer programs may have made it difficult to recognize them last year, said Teresa Rainieri, a teacher and literacy coach at a New York City elementary school. During online reading exercises, it could be difficult to hear if a student was able to blend letter sounds together to form words, to deconstruct words into individual phonetic sounds, and to rhyme, she said. We'll have to cut that article short because we've run out of time for today's episode of Education Today. Please be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kenny Yee for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Education Today is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.